next. As always, we would love to get the phone lines going early, answering all of your questions. So give us a call right here in our studio at 877-850-8585. Again, that's 877-850-8585. Or if you prefer to email us your questions, you can do so by visiting the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com and by clicking on the Email the Show tab. Yeah. Scotty!
Hey, good morning, Karen.
Hey.
Or good afternoon, actually.
Yes.
Well, yeah, and everybody, even if you don't want to send us an email, you should still visit our show's website at www.condocrazeandhoas.com. Again, that's www.condocrazeandhoas.com. There you can listen to all of our past shows. You can sign up for some of those seminars we're always talking about. You can see who the show's sponsors are, and we have links to all of their web pages. You can link to our Facebook page. You can automatically link to our brand new condo and HOA blog at www.hoa-condoblog.com. And you can join our email list and get copies of our newsletters and other announcements about the show.
And we have no Eric on the show this week, but after the last few months that he put in, I think he deserves a week off in Israel.
Yeah, you know, he's been pretty busy lately. I don't know if a relaxing vacation where he can take some time off involves 2.5 weeks in Israel with like 9 members of his family. But, you know, he's a... He deserves time off, nonetheless.
Absolutely.
You know. Rumor has it, though, that he did so well in getting the Democrats and Republicans to agree on all that HOA legislation that went into effect a few weeks ago, that he's going to try and maybe get in between the Israelis and the Palestinians while he's over there and get that conflict over. I just saw in the news actually. that there's an agreement to get peace talks started again yesterday.
Maybe that's not a coincidence. Happens to be there.
Yeah.
I know. Well, that's amazing. Yeah. Well. Last show, we had Darlis Walker on from Condominium Concepts as our guest, and just about the whole hour was devoted to the fights that happened in our Florida community associations over flying the flag. But we also spoke about the fact that our new legislation is already working because one of those HOA directors who was getting arrested for stealing association funds but remained on the board from prison, well... he finally resigned the day before our legislation would have had him removed.
Oh, what an honorable guy. He fell on his sword as soon as he was backed into a corner.
Yeah.
Well, the fact that a board member who steals association funds got to stay on the board for one day after getting arrested was reason enough to change that law. I know Eric thinks that. There are even some suggestions that he use association funds to pay for his bail.
Geez.
So, you know, I don't know if that's to the benefit of the unit owners there. But like we said last time we were on, one of the best accomplishments this year of our new legislation was getting the statutes amended to allow for certification of HOA directors. And since we already certified about, 5,000 people to be eligible to serve on a condo board, I think it's time for us to teach all the HOA directors out there as well. So here's where what to do. All right, we're going to have a list of our educational opportunities for board certification for both condos and, HOAs that, Eric got done this past year. And I'm going to give a list of it now, but you can find that on our website early, as I stated earlier. Our first class is going to be September 26th at the Hard Rock in Hollywood. It's going to be at 7 p.m. That's where we do our, the main thing. This is where it all started, basically.
Right, exactly.
And it's usually where you're going to have the most people show up, at least from our office, to answer questions that are going to supplement everything Eric talks about. Also, you're going to have Eric's going to be on October 10th at 8 a.m. at the Miami Beach Convention Center. On October 16th, Eric will be at 8 a.m. again at the West Palm Beach Convention Center. On October 24th at 8 a.m., he'll be at the Tampa Bay Condo and HOA Expo. On November 16th, Eric and the rest of the crew will be at 9 a.m. at the Holiday Inn at Universal Studios in Orlando. I'll probably be on the rides while they're teaching, but, maybe I'll go. And then on December 4th at 8 a.m. at the South Florida Cooperator Expo in Fort Lauderdale. And quite frankly, I'm sure we're going to have a whole host of shows and seminars to go on in 2014. And I think everybody at our office is working on those right now. And as soon as they're posted, we'll let you know.
Awesome. And in addition, at the September 26th and November 16th events, all of the show's sponsors will be there as well with all of their product and service information for your community. Now, just to remind everyone, the law provides that you can become certified 1 year before getting elected to the board or within 3 months of actually getting elected to the board. So there's a school of thought that says if you're thinking about running for the board in your upcoming election, why not take the course now, get certified, and you can promote the fact that you're already certified when you run. By the way, the course provides 4 continuing education credits for all Florida Community Association managers, and many, many CAMs have attended the seminar together with the directors on their board, and the CAMs are great to have because they really keep the attorneys on their toes at the seminar. So remember, go to www.condocrazeandhoas.com to register.
Now, I was going to basically take over the show today and just talk about whatever was on my mind, you know, what movies I like and, you know, what my favorite things are to get on my pizzas.
You didn't like Superman.
No, I didn't. But I just got a text message from Eric, and apparently he's listening on the internet.
Oh, God.
In Israel. So I guess I'll stick to the topics that are more condo and HOA related today. So let's talk about a topic that, no matter how many times we talk about it, there's always questions about it and always lots of arbitrations about it, including one I just filed this week. And that's what records can't be seen by owners that live in a Florida community association, specifically condominium associations and HOAs. Generally speaking, in both Florida condos and HOAs, unit owners are entitled to see virtually everything that the association has in its official records. And there are very few records that members can't see, but there are some, and here they are. Any record that's protected by lawyer-client privilege, attorney-client privilege, whatever you want to call it, and any record protected by what's called the work product privilege, which is the stuff that is used in anticipation or during a lawsuit. You know, memos, notes, impressions about strategy, things like that, including things that are prepared by the association at the attorney's direction, which reflects anything that could have anything to do with pending litigation or possible litigation. So that's a big deal. And when I say litigation, I'm also including administrative proceedings like arbitration cases and things of that nature. So that you can never see, Karen.
All right. Well, I guess that when you and Eric send a letter to a client association, it's not automatic that that letter is attorney-client privilege and can't be seen by everyone?
Yeah, that's right. And it's something that people don't understand sometimes. Well, just because I send a letter to an association does not make that letter privilege. For example, if I send a letter to a client about how to waive reserves, that's not attorney-client privilege communication because that has nothing to do with pending or anticipated litigation, criminal cases, civil cases, administrative cases, anything like that. If, however, I write a letter to a client discussing, I don't know, my strategy for a pending case to remove a dog or something like that, or what our defenses should be if we're getting sued, of course, that is privileged and owners can never see that until the case is over.
Okay, and let's tell our listeners about the other records that can't be seen by the owners. How about information obtained by an association in connection with the approval of the lease, sale, or other transfer of a unit?
Yeah, that's very good. Those are the typical forms that, you know, owners fill out when they buy a unit or when a lessee fills it out and he wants to rent a unit in a condo association. And as you know, there's typically a lot of personal info on there, like social security numbers, driver's license, bank accounts. You know, they do background checks on a lot of people. And remember, everybody, you can only do that if you have the power to approve people in your declaration. All right. So, you know, you don't want other people seeing that. It's only for the board of directors to see and to decide if you should be approved or not to live in an association.
And next, personnel records of association or management company employees, including but not limited to disciplinary, payroll, health and insurance records that can't be seen either.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I always like to say it like this. You know, when you're a member of an association, it's like being a stockholder in a company. Now, you're entitled to certain information if you're a stockholder of, like, let's say something big like GE. But, you know, you can't pull the personal service contract with the CEO that GE has with that GE has with its CEO just because you're a member. And it's kind of like that. And in addition to that, medical records of unit owners, of course, are confidential and can't be seen by any of the unit owners as well. And, you know, with all the nonsense, what's the best word? With all the adversarial situations that are arising out of, you know, certain requests that are coming with respect to people's medical disabilities, whether they're legitimate or not, and wanting to get exemptions from certain rules at condominiums and HOAs, medical records have become a big thing, and that is never open to inspection
No.
by the members, except by the association that will keep it confidential.
It's called HIPAA.
There you go. Very good, Karen.
Thank you. The next one seems pretty obvious. Social security numbers, driver's license numbers, credit card numbers, email addresses, telephone numbers, facsimile numbers, emergency contact information, all cannot be seen by other unit owners. The idea, of course, to prevent identity theft.
Yeah, I mean, that's huge. And this goes with the lease provisions we were talking about before. But how do I put this? You know, there are actually certain things like telephone numbers and email addresses. If the member who owns the address or the number says you can put it on a list, that's fine. But without their express permission, you can never make that available to anyone else. And, you know, Florida does lead the nation in identity theft cases.
Can you imagine if that was available?
Well,
oh, my God.
Yeah, listen, hey, at least we're number one. We just got knocked down in foreclosure cases or something recently. So the statute seems pretty clear in Florida that if the record does not fall within one of the exceptions we just spoke about, you know, unit owners can basically see it. But remember, you're going to know what it's going to be the things that you would whenever you feel shaky about. And I'm talking to, I guess, property managers out there and boards of directors. If somebody's asking for something that seems pretty personal, that's probably not allowed.
Right.
But, you know, everything's explicitly listed in the statute 718-111-12. So just check it if you're ever unsure.
Well, if those are the only records that unit owners can't see, then how is it that associations think they have the authority to enter into confidential settlement agreements like the one entered in between Trayvon Martin's family and the association where George Zimmerman lived?
Well, you know, this is actually something that our office has talked about a lot. Eric and I have always said the association can't prevent owners from getting a copy of that settlement agreement. And every unit owner who wants to know the precise details of a settlement agreement that the association entered into has the authority to see it. Why? Because the unit owners are the real party in interest in that case. I mean, it's there. Let's say you enter into a settlement agreement where the association has to pay money. Well, where do you think that money's coming from? It's usually coming from the unit
owners.
That's
right. They're paying it.
You know, so let's talk about a case where, in fact, something like that kind of happened. All right, this is case is called Yacht Club v. Sunset Harbor. It's a case out of the 3rd District Court of Appeals, which is the Court of Appeals for Miami-Dade County and Monroe County. And the association here sued the developer for construction defects. Pretty normal thing. The parties then participated in a confidential court-ordered mediation, but failed to reach an agreement. Again, keep in mind that everything that goes on at mediation is always confidential. I mean, that's the whole reason we have it, to air your grievances and try to work something out. Well, subsequently, the developer wrote a 6-page letter to all of the individual unit owners to inform them of the status of the legal proceedings. The letter included the amount of a settlement offer made by the developer and informed the owners that the offer had been rejected by the association. Well, the association got really upset at the developer because the developer violated the confidential nature of the mediation proceedings. So the association moved for sanctions, complaining of disclosure by the developer of the confidential information, yada, 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 and the trial court agreed. On appeal, however, the appellate court reversed, holding that the developer did nothing wrong by disclosing the confidential communications that took place at mediation to the unitors because they were the real parties in interest. So again, that's why Eric and I don't believe that, you know, settlement agreements are confidential when a condominium association, HOA, or co-op enters into them, because the members are the real parties to the agreement most of the time. There are very, very few situations where they're not.
Right.
We actually have a caller on hold right now.
Let's go to Jerry.
Yeah, let's go to Jerry in North Lauderdale.
Hey. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. Jerry, how are you?
I'm fine. I have a question that relates to the 2013 revisions to the 718 law.
All right. I'll try and answer them. The best guy to answer them is listening in Israel.
He said
right
he's
now.
Not listening anymore. Talk about pizza.
All right.
All right. Well, what do you think about plain cheese versus with pepperoni?
go ahead. Sorry.
Right. I understand that. This was referenced in your newsletter that they modified the law relating to the condominium being able to repair damages either necessitated because an owner is not doing something or because of negligence on their part. and have made it easier for the condominium to recover its cost and eased up on some of the lien and foreclosure issues. Could you clarify on that?
I'm not really sure about what you're specifically asking about here, Jerry, and I apologize for that. I'm not as well versed in the new revisions as Eric is, considering he wrote a whole bunch of them. But with respect to making it easier, I'm not aware of anything that's making it easier to collect from a unit owner that damages common elements. Typically, when a unit owner damages common elements, you're going to have two ways to go after them. You're going to be able to sue them in court for either breaching the contract or the declaration, which specifically states that – may specifically state each one's different. But for the most part, most say you have a duty to not cause damage, or maybe it's fluffier language that says you cannot do anything that will infringe on the association. Property or another unit owner's property or things of that nature. So that would be a breach of contract action, which you could bring under what's called Florida Statute 718.303, and there would be prevailing party attorney's fees for it. Or you could sue for just what's considered common law negligence, which is the unit owner or whoever that, let's say allowed a leak to go on for too long and, it got into the common elements and destroyed parts of that, or got into somebody else's unit and destroyed parts of that, you can sue in court for that. That's not going to be pursuant to the condominium statute. That's just what we call common law. And if the unit owner had a duty to protect a reasonable person would be able to know that this leak was going to cause damage, you would be liable under what's called common law negligence for damages of the parties that were damaged. As for the new statute, I'm not really sure if that changed anything with respect to the association's ability to go after people. There are a number of things in the statute that were passed not recently, but back, I guess it was in 2010, I believe, that had to do with being able to go after people for unpaid assessments and things of that nature and take away privileges of theirs with respect to that. And in HOAs, you can actually lien people for damage to property and whatnot, which you can't in condos. But again, Jerry, I hope I didn't muddy the waters too much there with your question. It's just I'm not really sure if that specific change was in the statute.
As I said, I referenced my question was raised because in reading your newsletter that was talking about the 2013 changes.
It might be in there. It's just the problem is Eric is
that is what had stated that there was a modification that would in some manner make it easier.
Yeah. Here's what I'm going to do, Jerry. During our first break, which is coming up right now, I'm going to review the statute, and if I come across something that I think answers your question, I'll make sure that I do. So keep listening, all right?
All righty, sir.
Thanks, Jerry.
Well, Karen, is it time to go to our first break?
Yeah, let's take our first break. If you'd like to call us and be part of the show, Scott can more than handle it. Eric is in Israel. You're listening to Condo Craze and HOAs here on Big Talk 850. The number to call is 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Condo Craze and HOAs here on Big Talk 850. Again, I'm Karen Curtis with attorney Scott Shapiro. Eric is in Israel, but we are taking your calls at 877-850-8585. Again, that's 877-850-8585. And by the way, if you have a product or service that would be beneficial to our listeners and want to be a guest on the show, attend our monthly seminars where you'll meet hundreds of different associations, be listed on the show's website, have a commercial spot during each week's show, you can become a sponsor of the show. Just visit the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com and send us a quick email.
Yeah, and if you want to call the law firm directly, you can pick our brains off the air on topics that we might not touch upon, and you can call us at Glazer & Associates at the number is 855-4-CONDO-CRAZE. Again, that's 855-4-CONDO-CRAZE. And you can visit the law firm's website at condo-laws.com. That's condo-laws.com. So, when I first started working for Eric, actually, Karen, I checked out the website before my interview. And
that was wise.
Yeah. And the one thing I couldn't get over was just how detailed it was. And this was, you know, almost eight years ago now, I think. And, you know, Eric goes out of his way on the weekends and at night to basically put as much information as he can on the firm's website to keep people, you know, maybe some of our clients, but some people that just want to keep up to date on what's going on in the law and how they can better run their association. And he really, really puts a lot of substantive things on the website for people to reference. All of our newsletters for the past years are all on the website. Links to really helpful places are on the website, and links to the show's website are on our firm's website as well, so you can listen to all the shows also. So I've always thought we've had a pretty top-notch website. Maybe
wealth of information.
Yeah, it's a wealth of information. So everybody should do themselves a favor and check out the firm's website, not the show's website, the firm's website, which is www.condo-laws.com. How about we take one of these calls here? How about Edith and Tamarack?
Hi, Mr. Shapiro. Good afternoon. How are you today?
I'm fantastic. Edith, how are you?
Okay. I live in a condo in Tamarack, and I live there many years. Okay. Mm-hmm. And
you know, I lived in a condo in Tamarack for about 2 years, Edith.
Oh.
Yeah. So there you go. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah.
Well, now there are younger people moving in here, and now we have people, and one of my phases, there are three, four phases. In one phase, they're allowed for little dogs. We're allowed little dogs, mm-hmm. Small dogs. But one of the neighbors moved in, didn't have a dog, got themselves a dog, a little one. That's fine, from the shelter. The other one had someone move in. The neighbor of mine moved in with a bigger dog, mm-hmm. A skinny, big dog. And she had the dog, she moved in, and then she had one daughter move in. She moved, well, I can't tell you the person, but she had moved in with, there was a big dog there. The dog keeps barking, and, it's a big, skinny dog.
All right.
And they allowed the dog here.
All right. Well, let me ask you this. Have you looked at your association's documents? Does it have a restriction on how big the dogs are allowed to be in the association?
Well, according to them, I didn't look at the things, but I know we're allowed, our phase, we're allowed little, you know, the little dogs.
Yeah, no, I understand that.
But not the big size dogs, up to certain pounds.
But here's the thing.
I think up to 15 pounds or something like that.
All right, well, here's the thing, Edith. I understand that, you know, that's just what's been the general practice at the association for the last few years or so. But what you really need to do is go to the public records in Broward County, and you can do this online, and you can pull your official documents for the association, and you need to check exactly what is allowed there, because if the dog is too big for the documents to be permitted under the documents, then you might be able to do something about it. If your documents just say you're allowed to have a dog, and just the general practice has been to allow people to have small dogs, well, there's nothing you can do about the size of the dog. But, you know, here's the thing. Typically, in the association's documents, they're going to have some sort of nuisance provision. Now, if you're allowed to have dogs, that's fine, but the dogs can't be a nuisance to the other owners. It can't be barking in the middle of the night, waking people up. It can't be pooping everywhere. So even if the big dog is allowed, a nuisance dog, which can be small or big, quite frankly, is probably never going to be allowed. So you'd really do yourself a favor by checking out the documents, which you can do for free. Broward County, I don't know the website off the top of my head, but if you Google official records of Broward County, you can log in there for free and pull your own documents and see what's going on. All right, Edith?
Edith, okay. You happen to get the official and the best knowledge of anyone in the firm about dogs is Scott.
that's what I went to law school for. All right. Well, thanks for calling, Edith. And I think we'll go to Barry now in North Palm Beach. Barry, how you doing? I can barely hear you, Barry.
You can barely hear me?
I can hear you now. All right.
Okay. I'm on a cell phone. Where's your firm out of, by the way, please?
Like, where is our main office located?
Where, if I was to call you, where are you located?
We're technically in Fort Lauderdale, but we're much closer to basically Dania Beach in Hollywood. We're on Sterling Road off of I-95, about a mile and a half west of I-95.
Got it. I hope our connection is good.
No. It's gotten better. We also have satellite offices in Orlando and Naples, but I think our Fort Lauderdale office is going to serve you the best in North Palm Beach.
Right, I'm a Palm Beacher. Okay. Mm-hmm. Here's my question. If for instance, you have a snowbird unit, condominium unit, that's pretty much visited by the owner 2 weeks out of the year, pretty much just leaves the unit to... without having any type of service to inspect or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And long story short, air conditioning has been failing over the years and has created a mold problem inside the unit. Okay. Now, my understanding of condo law is that the association owns the drywall into the structure. Now, in this situation, I was listening to your last conversation about common law damage.
With Jerry, yes.
Here we have an owner that's pretty much neglected a unit, doesn't have anybody taking a look at it. They were told on several occasions, and not in writing, but they were told that the air conditioning unit was failing and they needed to address it. Now, the unit's going to be sold most likely, and my concern is that we're going to have a mold problem there. And once the unit's sold, I have a feeling the new owners are going to come back on the association and tell us they have a mold problem. I believe the mold problem is caused by negligence.
Yeah, well, it sounds
for the way system. So what?
Well, it sounds like you're describing to me would be a pretty rock solid negligence case against the current unit owner who's allowed the unit to go to the that's a bad word I can't use on the radio. Let the unit basically fester. Basically, is the way I guess we'll call it. Yeah. If they sell the unit, the association doesn't have any responsibility to turn somebody's air conditioning on. And quite frankly, they have no right to go in there and turn it on unless the mold is starting to infiltrate the common elements. Which I haven't seen your documents, but generally, yes, it's from the undecorated portion of the inner wall into the unit is basically where the unit begins and the association's responsibility begins around the drywall area. If that mold's starting to affect the air quality in adjacent units, if it's infiltrating the common elements, if it's just touching anything that doesn't belong to that unit owner, yeah, I mean, it's a pretty clear-cut common law negligence case that you can bring about the party that's causing all the damage. Absolutely. If the association got hit by a new unit owner for there being mold in the unit, well, that would be a pretty easy case for the association to get rid of because it would be the prior owner's fault, not the association's. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Just an add-on question. When it comes time to, I guess our board is considering at this point, possibly making a rule that or clarifying this subject in a board meeting to have so that the board has a position on any type of potential problem.
Basically, you want to make a rule that people need to, if they're going to leave their unit alone for more than a few weeks, that they need to have somebody make sure that mold's not building up, maybe flush the toilets, make sure the plumbing doesn't go bad. Basically, to check on the unit, make sure things are not getting out of hand. Is that correct? That's what you guys want to do?
I think, yeah, that's basically what I do. We want to point out that any type of repercussions due to this lack of maintenance, whatever you want to call it, or preventive maintenance is going to be on, the homeowner would be, the unit owner would be on the hook for it.
All right. Well, go ahead. I'm sorry. Barry, but I just wanted to clarify how you can do this because it's not as simple as you think.
Okay. Well, right. That's why I asked for your address. I think what I probably would do is give you a call.
All right. Yeah. But I can explain this pretty quickly. And if you want to follow up with us, you can always give us a call at the office. I guess that's the number is 855-4-CONDO-CRIZ. But typically, when the board wants to make a rule regarding unit use, they're going to need to make darn sure that in your declaration of condominium that the board of directors can make rules regarding unit use. There's a big difference between unit use and making rules regarding the common elements. Typically, boards only have the power to make rules and regulations in a reasonable fashion regarding the common elements of a condo, like the pool closes at 6 p.m. or things like that. Anything that has to do with the inside of your unit and how you use it, that the board needs to be specifically delegated the power to make rules over in your declaration of condominium. And if you don't have it in there, the rule that they would make regarding the regulation of inside the unit would not be enforceable. What you can always do, though, is either A, amend your declaration of condominium to say you have the power to make those types of rules, or B, amend your declaration simply to state that, you know, you need to check on your apartment when you're away once in a while.
Okay. It's an interesting point. I have one other question for you. Once the drywall has, let's say this unit has mold, and drywall, a mold company comes in and says, okay, it has to be remunerated, and the drywall is going to come out.
All
at
right.
that point, even though the association would own the drywall, because what you're telling me, in your opinion, is due to common law negligence, I think that's how you mentioned it, that the association would not be on the hook for the drywall repair.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm just, you know, by listening to the facts from you on the phone, that's just how I interpret it. And I'm sorry about this, Barry, but we got to go to our break. So I'll try and answer your question a little bit more thoroughly when we get back.
Thank you. And we'll be right back. You're listening to Condo Craze and HOAs here on Big Talk 850. Give us a call in the studio, 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. We'll be right back. And welcome back to the final segment of Condo Craze and HOAs here on Big Talk 850. Again, I'm Karen Curtis with attorney Scott Shapiro. Eric is in Israel for the week. And the number to call is 877-850-8585.
Yeah.
877-850-8585.
Yeah, and I guess before we start the final segment here today, I just got an email sent to me from our office manager, Brian. And it's an email from, a listener named Joe Nixon. And he asked, can I find out the salary our condo employees? Well, Joe, in a simple answer, no.
No.
You're entitled to see any type of contract that the association has with the management company or things of that nature, but the personal payment information to the individual employees, I'm going to say no. I might get overruled by my boss, but he's in Israel, so my word's final today.
Okay.
All right.
Let's go to Ed.
Ed in Miami. Ed, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
I'm all right, considering. What can I help you with, Ed?
Okay, I mistakenly went on to deed in around 2003. I went on deed, but I mistakenly went on deed in contravention of the governing documents, which state that that if I do that, the transfer is null and void and confers no title. So I'm a little bit confused. If I did go on deed in contravention and it confers no title, am I an owner or am I not an owner?
Well, when you say you went on deed, who had the interest in the unit before it was conveyed to you?
Well, it was my wife, but she was not my wife at that time. We were just living together, and she gave me interest in the property when we were not married.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we were supposed to seek approval from the association.
Were you already living there, though?
I was already living there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, technically, yeah, I guess you needed to get approval. But since this wasn't really a bona fide transfer, I don't think that the association should give you too much of a problem of retroactively approving a deed that was done between two people who are already living in the unit together. Have you encountered any confrontation from the association on this?
Well, the reason why I asked is I'm involved in a lawsuit with them. They sued me as an owner, and then they claimed to the Human Rights Commission that I was not an owner because I went on deed in contravention the governing documents.
And how long did you do this before they made an issue out of it?
Well, they didn't sue me over that issue. They sued me over another issue.
When did you get the interest in the unit, and when did they sue you or start fighting about that?
I think in about 2002, I went on deed.
Yeah, and when did they start giving you a problem about it?
And then they sued me in about 2010.
All right, we got a little thing here in Florida called the statute of limitations. All right, so an action that comes out of real property with respect to who owns it and whatnot, I believe, and this is off the top of my head, they had 5 years to bring that action. It's either 5 or 4. I can't remember, and I'll look it up, but you're good. All right, Ed? Nothing to worry about.
The thing is, if the deck say that it confers no title.
Yeah, well, you know, here's the thing, all right? You you were conveyed title. They could have voided that title had they brought an action within the statute of limitations against you to have a judgment entered by the court saying that you do not have title to this unit because you were in violation of the Declaration of Condominium. But since this happened, I don't know, 11 years ago, and they didn't start complaining about it until 2010, tough luck for them. You're good. You're good, Ed.
Well, actually, I don't want to be the owner because then that might void their lawsuit, I'm thinking.
Oh, well, you know, I'm not going to discuss litigation strategy over the radio with anyone, especially someone who's not my client. I mean, if you want to talk about this off the air, why don't you give us a call at the office, Ed, all right?
And that number
okay,
is?
Okay, thanks a lot,
no
Scott.
Problem.
That number is?
The number is 855, the number 4, Condo Craze.
All right. And I know that when Eric teaches the board certification seminar, many people in the audience gasp when they learn that even the account ledger of the unit owner can be seen by every other unit owner. And I guess that's because, like you say, as a unit owner, you are the real party of interest and that you have the right to know about the financial status of the community that you live in. And absent those few exceptions we just spoke about earlier in the show, you get to see everything.
Yeah, I mean, you think about it, all right? If somebody's not paying, well, if there's going to be a shortfall, it gets supplemented by everybody else at the association. So, yeah, you're the real party in interest. So you should have a right to know why you're paying extra money. Yeah, you know, it's actually amazing how many people get the answer to the question wrong when Eric asked that at the seminar.
Right?
People really think that what they owe to the association in delinquent assessments is absolutely confidential. And like you say, some of them are shocked to learn that their delinquency can be seen by anybody. But there's a fine distinction. The association can't publicize a list of people who are delinquent to like make them pariahs in the community. That's called basically publishing a deadbeat list. That is absolutely unacceptable. But if a specific unit owner requests to see a specific ledger or specific ledgers, they are entitled to do that.
All right.
Hey, looks like we got another call here from Joe in Miramar.
Joe, we have about 3 minutes. Go ahead.
Okay, real quick, I'll ask a two-part question. First thing is, I'm on a board in an HOA, but I want to know is, are those technically open to the public or just for the association members? Like, can a tenant show up if just to listen? And the second part is, you just mentioned about statute limitations.
Mm-hmm.
If someone gets evicted and you like put a and you want to take them to small claims court for the balance, how long do you have to do that? Thank you.
All right. Yeah. Again, the statute of limitations, there's basically a rule for everything. I'm not 100% sure if the Landlord-Tenant Act has its own specific statute of limitations. And without looking it up in the short amount of time that we have right now, I'm just going to guess that it's probably between 4 or 5 years because it's a breach of contract action. I wouldn't want anyone to, you know, basically write that in stone, though, because, quite frankly, I don't really practice with the Landlord-Tenant Act that much. I'd be more than happy to have that answer for everybody next week, though, after I have time to look it up. I think Joe's other question had to do with people showing up to board meetings that are not members. Generally, yeah. I mean, they're usually open to anybody. That doesn't mean anybody can speak at the meetings or speak whenever they want. And the board can certainly have people removed if they're, getting in the way of the board conducting business. But generally, yeah, board meetings are open to just about anybody. They don't have to be, members of the association. I mean, you know, you can bring your kids. They're not members of the association.
Right.
I guess, you know, usually if you have them at a clubhouse or something, if somebody's a renter, well, they have just as much right to go into the clubhouse as any owner. So I wouldn't preclude anybody just by virtue of the fact that they don't own something at the HOA. That being said, if they're causing a disruption or something, they certainly don't have a right to disturb the association from conducting business. Karen, I guess we're out of time.
Yes, we are. And Eric will be back next week. Scotty, you did a great job.
All
you
right.
Fielded all of the questions.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm
wonderful.
Sure they're all incorrect, but I apologize to anybody if you get sued.
They're very good. And be sure that you go to the website, condocrazeandhoas.com. Check that out. And check us out again next week at noon when we're all back here on Big Talk 850. Thanks for joining us.
All right. Goodbye.